It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. This week we're going to have a half-hour program, and then that's going to be followed by quite a few 15-minute programs. So we're going to kind of fill in that sector of the broadcasting history. Some music in there from Benny Goodman and Frank Sinatra, and some kid shows, because we haven't played many of those. They're coming up later, but we'll start off now with Screen Guild Theater. And this is called The Enchanted Cottage, and it's from 1939.
The Gulf Screen Guild Theater. The director of the Gulf Theater and your host, Roger Pryor.
Our play tonight, The Enchanted Cottage by Sir Arthur Wing Venero, is a modern fable in which we meet Helen Hayes as Laura Pennington and Frederick March as Oliver Bashforth. And now, as stage manager, I call for lights. Music. The curtain rises on the living room of a country cottage in England. It's mid-morning, and Mrs. Minette, the housekeeper, is opening the door for some early visitors.
Good morning, Miss Pennington.
Good morning, Mrs. Minette. I brought Major Hillgrove to call on Mr. Bashforth.
Mr. Bashforth's not down yet. Come in.
Oh,
may I, sir?
Huh?
Mrs. Minette will take your hat, Major Hillgrove.
Oh, of course. Forgive me, Mrs. Minette, for appearing stupid, but the blind are sometimes socially awkward.
Blind?
The sofa.
I didn't know.
Over here, Major Hillgrove.
Thank you.
How is Mr. Bashforth?
Not one of his good days, Miss Pennington. You must be prepared for that. Excuse me, I'll get Mr. Bashforth.
There you are, Major.
So that was Mrs. Minette?
Yes.
I say, does she look like a witch?
Well, now you speak of it. Oh, but not like a wicked witch.
Well, the townspeople say that a grandmother was seized by a mob in 1865 and burned for witchcraft.
Oh, well, there's the story, yes, but surely you don't believe in witches.
Well, we blind amuse ourselves with all sorts of odd fancies. And then, who knows?
I think Mr. Bashford's coming. I don't know him very well, so perhaps I'd better wait in the garden.
Oh.
You can call me when you've finished, and I'll take you home.
No, I won't be staying long. Wait here, please.
Look. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Bashford. This is Major Hillgrove.
How do you do?
You must forgive me for breaking in on you like this. Your housekeeper said you were a bit under the weather.
It's this pain in my head. It'll split on me one of these days.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Have you any phenacetin?
Nothing does it any good.
Oh, do let me get you some. I can go to the druggist and be back in 10 minutes. I'll hurry.
You don't have to.
Kind little person. My man's in bed with influenza. She gave me an arm across the park. I wonder why the plain women of the world are the kindest, Bashful.
How did you know she's plain? You can't see her.
I sensed it. By the way, since we're neighbors, I thought you and I might get together for a talk occasionally.
I took this cottage for the sole purpose of being lonely.
Sick man?
Well, don't I sound like one?
Where were you wounded?
In the Argonne. August 18.
Where did they get you?
My leg, can't you see? Oh, that's right, you can't. Messed up my face with shrapnel, too. But it's my head that pounds and pounds and
you
pounds.
You made work right in time.
Oh, for heaven's sake, stop that rot. What about you?
Attack at Vimy, 13th of April. They gave me a permanent eclipse. Good Lord. What time is that?
11.
I had an appointment. I'll miss the chap entirely.
Suppose I lend you Mrs. Minette. She'll take you home. Mrs. Minette?
I would appreciate it.
Yes, Mr. Bashford.
Will you help Major Hillgrove across the park?
Of course, sir.
Thank you, Mrs. Minette.
I hope you'll forgive my bad manners, Major. Will you come see me again?
How about tomorrow?
I'll look for you, Major.
Good morning. If you'll just warn me of the steps, Mrs. Minette, I think we'll get along famously.
Yes. Yes. Oh, Mother. Yes, hello, Mother. Oh, no, please. Oh, please, let's not discuss that again. I tell you I'm perfectly all right. No, no, there's no use in your coming down here, Mother. But don't you see, I said... Don't you... Hello! Hello, you...
Mr. Baxter.
Huh? Oh, Miss Pennington. Yeah, the Major remembered an appointment, and Mrs. Manette took him home.
Oh, I hurried as fast as I could. Here's the phenacetin.
Thank you. There's water there in the carafe.
Yes. Two tablets now and two more in 3 or 4 hours, if your head still hurts. Now, you must lie down here on the sofa. I'll fix the pillow.
Thank you.
It's best to keep quiet after phenacetin. There. Is that comfortable?
Yes, very.
Well, good morning, Mr. Baxter.
I say, Miss Pennington.
Yes?
I've discovered I shall have to leave this cottage.
Leave? You mean for good?
Yes. Hide myself somewhere or other.
But hide from whom?
My people. They won't let me alone. I mean, they will pester me and torment me.
Torment you?
I came down here because they were turning me into a raving lunatic with their meddling. You see, they don't realize that I'm done, I'm finished, I'm washed up.
But, Mr. Bashford, that isn't true. When you've rested and your head's better...
They don't realize that I have to avoid people who knew me as I was, healthy, strong, and active. They don't know how I loathe the shriveled face and shrunken carcass.
But Mr. Bashford, you can't... You mustn't say those things.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't be pouring all this out on you.
Oh, it isn't that.
I'm terribly upset. You see, I was just talking to my mother on the telephone before you came in. You know what their latest plan is? They're sending my sister Ethel down here to take care of me.
Won't you like that?
Ethel. We've always fought as long as I can remember. She irritates me. She rubs me raw. I can't stand anymore.
But if she's your sister, Mr. Bashford, I should think...
She's a tyrant. A meddlesome tyrant.
You must relax. Just lie back and close your eyes. There, Mr. Bashford. I hope you won't be angry with me for offering you advice.
Oh, why should I? Everyone gives me advice.
You know, it isn't good for you to live alone. Whether you remain here in this cottage or go somewhere else...
Oh, Mrs. Manette looks after me.
You can't count on Mrs. Manette or any housekeeper. Why don't you fall in with this plan of your people's? Give it a try.
Oh, pain in my head's more than I can stand.
It's dreadful that you should have no companion. Nobody to read to you or play cards with you on a wet day. Fill your pipe for you. Chat over the news in the papers in the long evening.
Oh, I don't mind it. Better than having my family around.
But you're not well. You need someone. Why, often and often, during the rough weather we've been having lately, when the wind has been roaring in my chimney and my fire hissing at the rain, I've pictured you sitting here alone, and they'll be waiting lunch. I really must go.
No, wait. No, don't go yet.
Oh, but I must. You see...
No. You're kind. You're very kind. You wouldn't get on a man's nerves. Strip the very skin off of him.
Goodbye, Mr. Baxter.
Now, look here. I am desperately lonely at times. And you must be, too. We're both in the same boat.
Two misfits, you mean?
Well, something like that. Miss Pennington, I know this may seem a rather startling idea, but why not give up your lodgings and move into my cottage?
Oh, you don't... Oh, you're laughing at me. This is your idea of a joke.
Oh, no, I'm dead serious. Oh, we'd be married first, of course. That would keep my silly mother and sister away. And my stepfather, too.
Oh, it's fantastic. You don't know what you're saying.
But I do.
Oh, if you want to marry and keep your people away, well, there must be dozens of smart, pretty girls in London in your own...
Pretty sense. Girls? They're the... Those are the kind I can't face. Do I look like an eligible husband for a pretty girl?
Oh, I see.
You see what?
You asked me to marry you, Mr. Bashford. Not only to protect yourself from your family, but because I possess the special qualification of being ugly.
Miss Pennington, I didn't mean to...
It doesn't matter. I think I'd better go.
Oh, Miss Pennington, don't go. Please.
Oh, how could you? How could you?
Oh, please. I wouldn't have hurt you for the world. What I meant to say was that no woman would marry me except in pity. And the girls in my set, as you call them, are not the sort who devote themselves to an unsightly, neurotic wreck such as I've become. Oh, I am sorry I've hurt you.
Oh, it was stupid of me to be upset. Of course, I know I'm plain, but
It's a shock to be told about it so bluntly.
I'd give anything to call it all back.
May I make one suggestion, Mr. Bashford? Never again you approach an unattractive woman in this way. Remember that even unattractive women have their dreams.
Dreams?
Of forgetfulness, of oblivion. Dreams in which they're just as lovely and desirable as the loveliest and the most desirable of their sex. Remember that. And if you can spare them too complete an awakening, it's an act of charity.
Miss Pennington, your name's Laura, isn't it? Laura. Yes, Miss Manette?
The mail, sir.
Leave it there on the table.
Yes, sir. I suppose Miss Pennington is staying to lunch?
Oh, no, I'm just going, Mrs. Manette.
No, you must stay. Now, really, you must.
Oh, no, I can't.
No, please.
Well, all right. If you want me to.
Yes, Miss Pennington will stay, Mrs. Manette.
Yes, sir. I thought she would.
I say, did you see her face when she came in? I wonder if she was listening outside the door.
Why should she?
Well, I don't know, but you know the story. They say she's a witch.
Do you think she's planning to cast some kind of spell?
No, that's poppycock, of course. Listen.
What is it?
Mrs. Manette. Good Lord. Mrs. Manette's laughing. Well, people may call this a hill, but I say it's a mountain.
Oh, you can't take it. That's what comes of not eating your bread crust when you were little.
Oh, you've got it all wrong. Bread crusts that'll make your hair curly.
Oh.
Here, let's sit down.
Look, you can see the whole countryside from here. There's the river, and there's the crossroads, and there's the church, see?
Hey, Laura.
Yes, Oliver.
Mother phoned again this morning. Ethel's planning to move in on me next week, so I'll have to disappear.
You mean go away?
Must. I've got to.
I'll miss you.
Oh, don't think I won't miss you.
I'll always remember these last 2 weeks.
I shan't forget them. We have had fun.
When will you go?
Tomorrow.
So soon? Oh, no.
Well, I wouldn't have to go at all if you'd marry me. I can't ask you to love me, but we do get along. We could be happy together. Very happy. I need you.
Do you, Oliver?
Desperately. Be kind. Say yes.
Then yes, Oliver. Yes.
No. Something dreadful would happen if a bride wasn't carried over the threshold. There you are.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, Mrs. Manette.
I didn't mean to frighten you. I'm so happy for you both.
Thank you, Mrs. Manette. And now, if you'll rustle us up some supper.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, right away.
Make it something special, please. I say, it's getting dark, isn't it? Better light the lamp, hmm?
Oliver, did you notice how she looked at us?
Mrs. Manette? Oh, don't bother about her. Yeah, that's better, isn't it? A lamp can...
What's the matter?
Something's happening. I don't know what. Can't you feel it?
Yes, I can.
It's in the air. It's all about us.
Oliver, I'm frightened. Hold me. Tight, Oliver.
Nothing can hurt you now, darling.
Oliver...
What is it?
When you carried me just now, you didn't limp. You're standing so straight. And they've gone. Your scars. Look there in the mirror. Walk, Oliver. Walk, let me show you.
Wait, Laura, don't move. Stand just as you are.
I can't believe.
With the light falling on your hair like that, striking sparks in your eyes. God, I hadn't realized. But you weren't like this. You've become... Yes, that's it. You've changed.
What is it, dearest?
Oh, Laura, you're beautiful. beautiful. Beautiful.
And now, in this brief moment before the curtain in the Gulf Theater rises on Act Two of The Enchanted Cottage, we'd like to send all our neighbors here in America our best wishes for the Thanksgiving season. Each one of us must make up for himself his own list of things to be thankful for, but high on every list will be the fact that all Americans can call each other neighbor. That use of the word neighbor tells us an important fact about our country. It tells us that the miracles of modern communication, especially the family automobile and our coast-to-coast network of good roads, have made neighbors even of families on opposite sides of a continent. Perhaps you drove home to see your folks last Thursday, or possibly you're planning to take a trip in your car sometime soon. Well, just that kind of travel is what helps maintain sympathy and understanding between all Americans. And speaking for the good Gulf dealers along your way and for the Gulf oil companies, let me tell you how proud Gulf is of its share in the work of making automobile travel more convenient and more economical for all alike, in helping to keep all Americans neighbors. And so, the curtain's about to rise on the second act of The Enchanted Cottage, starring Helen Hayes and Frederick March. Lights! Music! Curtain! It's the next evening at the cottage. Oliver and Laura, frightened and incredulous at the spell that's been cast over them, send for their blind friend, Major Hillgrove.
I had my man bring me over as soon as I got your note, Bashforth. Is something wrong?
If you could see us with your eyes, I mean...
We had to talk to someone.
You sound frightened.
You understood from Oliver's letter, didn't you, that something had happened, something out of the common?
Vaguely.
Well, I didn't dare be more explicit in the letter.
You'll never believe us, Oliver.
No one could.
Major Hillgrove, I'm not plain anymore.
She's beautiful. Gloriously beautiful, Hillgrove.
And Oliver, oh, if you could see him.
Laura's growing lovelier and lovelier every day.
And Oliver's stronger and straighter and handsomer.
But don't you hear the difference?
Yeah, don't you hear it, Major Hillgrove?
Why, yes, yes.
Oh, I'm frightened. I'm so frightened.
You see, we believe, not, I know you laugh at us, but we believe it's that woman.
Woman?
Mrs. Manette.
You know, my housekeeper.
The witch.
Oh, don't laugh, don't laugh, please. We believe it. How else could this thing have happened?
Unless we're under some sort of spell, enchantment.
Tell me, Oliver, when did this...
When did the change begin? Yesterday.
On our homecoming.
After the marriage.
Almost as soon as we set foot in this cottage.
Mrs. Manette was waiting at the door to welcome us.
That moment was when the change began, Major Hillgrove.
See, we thought it was some sort of illusion. But in the morning, over the breakfast table, we both saw clearly how we'd changed.
It was so frightening.
But why? What is there to be alarmed about?
But don't you see? If Mrs. Manette is a witch and our transformation is due to sorcery... Well, what she's given, she can take away.
Exactly, Hildro.
Supposing I offend Mrs. Manette, or Oliver does. It's so easy to offend without meaning to... Oh, you must advise us, Major Hillgrove. What'll we do?
Yes, what?
Well, I do hear this change in you, and I say take the gift and enjoy it without question. Accept it humbly as a heaven-sent miracle, and thank God for it on your bended knees.
A heaven-sent miracle?
Yes. Yes, that's just what it is. A heaven-sent miracle. Bedtime, Laura?
Tomorrow. How I dread it.
Oh, you'll knock Mother and Stepfather right off their feet.
You haven't told them about it. I mean about the change.
Not a word. No, I want them to see. And they shan't see until Major Hillgrove breaks the ice a bit.
I hope your mother and stepfather will like me.
Like you? Oh, darling. You'll be irresistible. Put out that light while I lock up the door, will you?
Oliver.
Hmm?
I want to be married all over again.
Good heavens, what for?
I want to have a grand wedding with a bevy of bridesmaids and a page to carry my train. I want to be married by a bishop. A grave, portly bishop with lawn sleeves and all the rest of it. And I want to wear a dress of ivory satin and a Honiton lace veil and a magnificent pearl necklace, a present from the bridegroom.
Oh,
and
oh, you're really doing it in style. Oh. We'll take it up with Mother and Stepfather tomorrow.
Oh, yes. Yes, tomorrow.
Well, ready to go up?
Yes, darling, ready.
Mr. Smallwood, your son Oliver and his wife have been kind enough to invite me to meet you and Mrs. Smallwood here this afternoon.
I had no idea that my daughter-in-law was having him at home.
Yes, we are under the distinct impression that our visit was to be a family affair.
Purely a family affair. Oliver should be here to receive us. This is his duty.
Oh, the young person he married.
Well, Mrs. Smallwood, your son is in the next room.
The next room?
With his wife. They're waiting for me to summon them.
Really? I can't understand this extraordinary behavior.
Well, they've asked me to prepare you for a very great surprise.
I must say this sudden marriage was a bombshell. He's simply thrown himself away.
We understand his wife is nobody and unsightly into the bargain.
Ah, well, that brings us to the point, Mr. Smallwood. Your daughter-in-law was a plain young woman.
Was?
Your son and Miss Pennington were married. They entered that door. He, a shattered, wry-necked, half-crippled fellow. And she, a little, meager, wasted thing, whose only charm was a gentle manner.
Most unattractive.
When they crossed that threshold, the change began.
Change? What change?
Do you believe in miracles? Modern miracles? That may happen to you, to me, today, tomorrow? That may relieve misfortune, retrieve disaster? That may heal the sick, make the lame walk, and the blind. See?
Well, really, I
do. For I tell you that Oliver and his wife have been touched by a power which is beyond earthly power. And they're wonderfully, gloriously transformed.
Transformed?
Did you say transformed?
Laura is beautiful. With music in every sound she breathes. And my ear tells me grace in every movement of a lovely body. And Oliver walks erect. He's limp. He's gone. I'll bring them in.
This is my wife, Mother. I hope you and she will be great friends. Stepfather, this is Laura.
How do you do?
How do you do?
It's so kind of you both to come to see me.
Mother, I suppose Major Hillgrove's explained the way it all happened.
Happened?
Yes, the change in us. You ever know anything so marvelous? I mean, you can't judge of the change in Laura, of course, but you can see the difference in me.
My dear boy,
Yes, the change is most marked, Oliver, most marked.
Marked? Is that all you've got to say?
Well, look at us. Poor Oliver, don't you
see... We're very sorry, Ollie. We have to go away so quickly. We warned you this is only a flying visit.
Mother!
Oh, Major Hillgrove, how could you?
Never mind, Agnes. Goodbye, Oliver. Every happiness, my dear. Come, Agnes.
I'll write you soon, Oliver. Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye, Major Hillgrove.
Major, Laura, what's the meaning of their behavior? What's the meaning of it?
Oliver, don't.
You are beautiful. You are.
And you, Oliver.
Laura, come here.
Yes, Major.
I want to touch your face. Yes. Yes, I see.
Major Hillgrove, am I beautiful? Am I?
Well... Why don't you answer her?
Oliver, Laura, I'm afraid we've been under an illusion.
Mrs. Manette.
You called me, madam?
No. No.
Come here, Mrs. Manette.
Yes, sir.
Tell me, you've known Mrs. Bashforth for a long time.
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Bashforth for some months.
Yes, sir.
Then you are thoroughly familiar with their appearance before they were married.
Yes, sir.
When they entered this cottage after their marriage, were they just as you'd always known them?
Yes. Yes, sir.
Their outward appearance, their look, there's been no change? Answer me, Mrs. Minette.
No. No, sir.
Look at them. Are they still just as you've always known them? Are they?
Yes, sir. I knew you had to find out the truth this afternoon.
I'm sorry, Oliver.
Mrs. Minette.
What is there to be sorry for? Shall I let you into a secret?
Secret?
Oh, yes. Yes.
A man and woman in love have a gift of sight that's not granted to others. Keep your love, and you'll always be beautiful to each other. Scarecrow that I am, If my man could rise out of his grave and walk in this minute, even I would be pretty to him. Even I.
Well, I'd better go home now, I think. Laura and I will take you, Major. Unless Laura's tired.
I am tired. You'll forgive me, Major Hillgrove.
Forgive you. Forgive me.
Dear friend.
Goodbye.
Till tomorrow. Don't hurry, Oliver. I shan't be lonely.
Come, Major. We'll be expecting you for lunch tomorrow, so don't disappoint us.
Thanks.
Bye. Oliver?
Yes, Laura?
What is it, darling?
You forgot to kiss me.
So I did.
Darling, if there should be a child, there's a chance. A chance that it'll be beautiful, isn't there?
Not a chance. A certainty.
Because of you. Because of you.
If it's a girl, it'll be the most beautiful thing in creation. If it's a boy, the sturdiest kid that ever breathed.
Yes, it will. I know it will.
You're lovely. You're lovely beyond anything I ever imagined.
You're more wonderful than anything I've ever known.
Oh, those silly people. Why can't they see?
We see. We know. That's all that matters. We know.
Thank you, Helen, and thank you, Freddie. Thank you very much. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here we are, ready for our weekly question box, in which the stars appearing on the program are asked one question each, and if they fail to answer, they have to pay a forfeit.
Well, good night, folks. It was nice meeting you all.
Wait a minute, Freddie. Wait for me.
Oh, you too, Helen?
Oh, yes. I just remembered to left some potatoes on the stove.
Oh, now, Helen, you're not afraid of a question.
Oh, yes, Roger, I am. Whenever I hear a lot of questions, I start getting confused.
Well, that's natural enough. I know that often when there's some kind of a discussion, lots of us get confused because we hear so many different statements that it's hard to know what to think. Isn't that right, Harry?
Yes, it certainly is, Roger. And you know, folks, a good many confusing things can be said. In fact, I fear sometimes are said about gasoline. The important thing, however, for you to remember always is to buy the product of a company in which you have the utmost confidence. A company whose avowed policy is to manufacture and sell only the finest products that skill, science, and great resources make possible. And will you remember also that this is the policy of Gulf? That its gasolines, Good Gulf and No Nox, are today greatly improved over what they were even 6 months ago. Just as 6 months ago, they were better products than they were the year before. All this is done as a matter of course, and is the result of forever keeping pace with every known means of product improvement. With Gulf, the policy of constantly improving the quality of its products is a pledge. A pledge that you motorists will find maintained whenever you stop at the sign of the Gulf Orange Disc.
Thank you, Harry Von Zell. And now for the question box. The first question goes to Freddie March. Freddie, I'm going to give you the history of a certain star. And whenever you think you know who it is, you say so.
All right.
Now, she was born in London, has appeared in 37 stage productions, introduced the song Limehouse Blues, and has appeared in more Noel Coward shows than any...
Wait a minute. Gertrude Lawrence.
Absolutely right, Freddie. And incidentally, Gertrude Lawrence will appear in the Gulf Theater next Sunday with Herbert Marshall and Johnny Mac Brown. And now here's a question for Helen Hayes. Helen, do you know Bing Crosby?
Oh, yes. Well, that was an easy question. Goodbye.
Wait a minute. That's not the question. What's Bing Crosby's real full name?
Bingham?
No, I'm sorry. He probably wishes it were, but his real name is Harry Lillis Crosby. And
oh,
Helen,
golly.
for your forfeit, you must read this.
Oh. The quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. It blesseth him that gives and him that takes.
That's right, Helen. That's easy. But now read it as Jimmy Durante would read it. Come on.
The quality of moist is not strained.
Thank you, Helen Hayes. And now, ladies and gentlemen, before we say goodnight, I'd like to extend you an invitation to tune in next week when we bring you from New York Gertrude Lawrence, Herbert Marshall, Johnny Mac Brown, and, of course, Oscar Bradley and his Gulf Orchestra. Until then, this is Roger Pryor saying goodnight, everybody.
The
Ellen Hayes appeared tonight through the courtesy of the makers of Campbell's Soup. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
KNX Los Angeles, the voice of Hollywood.
Courtesy of KNX Los Angeles, or Hollywood as they said, it's the Gulf Screen Guild Theater and the Enchanted Cottage from 1936. And now, this.
Here's Joan Benny, daughter of Jack Benny, one of the guests at this year's Reps Showcase. You said that some of the details in the television show and the radio show were true. Can you tell us about that?
Some of the things they used on the show were actually true, and some of the things were totally made up. The Colemans being our neighbors, not true. The Jimmy Stewarts being our neighbors, true. My mother having a sister, Babe, true. We had a polar bear in the basement, false. I'm looking forward to it. As I say, I'm always happy to come to Seattle.
This year's guests feature Joan Benny, daughter of Jack Benny, with some insight on her famous father. Terry Moore will be there, as well as Tommy Cook and Ivan Curry, and many, many more. Live drama, interviews, panel discussions. Don't miss it. April 17th through the 19th at the Bellevue Coast Hotel. Check out the details at repsshowcase.com. Don't miss the 2015 Reps Showcase. Make your plans, and we'll see you this year at the Reps Showcase. Now, those kid shows I mentioned, we're going to have two 15-minute programs for you. One of them is Junior G-Man. This is The Jigsaw Puzzle.
Donald Peterson presents The True Adventures of Junior G-Man. The Junior G-Man are on the air, speeding to your homes, ready for action.
Stand by. All Junior G-Men, stand by. Stand by for thrilling details of the Jigsaw Puzzle. Calling all Junior G-Men. Calling all Junior G-Men. Stand by for report of Junior G-Man Eddie Green concerning...
The Jigsaw Puzzle.
Report number 981, as given by Operator Eddie Green of Belrose.
Well, although I still go to school during the week, I have a little part-time job over at the Luxor Theater. I'm an usher. And while I only work on Saturdays, the money I earn almost pays for the rest of the week's expenses. Well, one Saturday night after I'd finished with my regular duties, Mr. Winters, the manager, asked me to go out to the ticket booth and tell Miss Larkin, the cashier, to bring the day's receipts to the office. It was little after 10 o'clock, and the last showing of the feature had already been over.
So Mr. Winters wants the receipts, does he?
That's right, Miss Larkin.
Well, it's all right with me. The sooner this money is counted and checked, the sooner I can go home. And the sooner I can go home, the better I'll like it.
You're pretty tired, aren't you, Miss Larkin?
Tired is hardly the word for it. I'm all in. Positively exhausted.
I don't blame you. Sure was a big day.
Well, the biggest we've had in a long time. And it's not over yet.
What do you mean?
Simply that my day isn't over until Mr. Winters and I have finished counting and checking all this money.
Gosh, that'll take a long time, too.
You said it. At least another couple of hours or so. I'll be just about dead in my feet by that time.
I'll bet. Gee, if there's anything I can do to help, I'll be on.
Well, I don't know, Eddie. Of course, you could wait around and help me carry the money into Mr. Winters' office. That is, if you're not in any hurry to get home.
Oh, no, I'm in no hurry. I'd be glad to help.
All right, then. Just wait till I get all the money together in this strong box.
Okay.
Just sweep all that change together in one pile.
All right.
That's it. Now, just as soon as I unlock this box, you can put it all in.
Well, after Miss Larkin and I had gotten all the money together, we locked up the ticket booth for the night and started for Mr. Winter's office at the other end of the lobby. When we got to the door, I opened it.
Who's there?
It's Miss Larkin, Mr. Winters. And Eddie Green is with me.
Well, all right. Come in.
Open the door, will you, Eddie?
Sure thing. There you are. Go ahead. Gee whiz.
Step inside and shut that door.
All right. All right, gosh.
That's the idea. Now, just stay over.
What does this mean, Mr. Winters? This man has a gun, and... is this some kind of a joke?
I wish it were, Miss Larkin, but unfortunately it isn't.
But I don't understand.
You will, sister. You will. Won't she, pal?
Yes, I suppose she will.
Maybe you'd better explain to her just to make sure.
But I...
Go ahead.
But I...
Go ahead. You've been dying to tell somebody what's going on here, and here's your chance. Go ahead. Tell her what a nasty man I am. Tell her what I'm going to do.
What does he mean, Mr. Winters?
Simply that he's going to rob the theater of the day's receipts.
But he can't do that.
It's no use, Miss Larkin. We haven't got a chance. He's got a gun and he's...
And a nervous trigger finger. Now, don't get me excited. Just do as you're told and everything will be okay. Now, you.
You mean me?
Yeah, you. Just step over to that desk and put that strong box you're carrying into that empty violin case.
Go
ahead. Don't take any chances. Just follow his instructions.
Yes, Mr. Winters.
That's the stuff.
There.
Now, just close the case and lock it.
All right.
That's it. Now hand it over.
All right. Here you are.
Thanks, kid. You've been a big help. Now, you.
What do you want?
When I give the word, you open the door, see?
You're pretty sure of yourself, aren't you? You
can't that... chatter before I get sore. I'm a pretty patient guy, but I got a limit to that patience. Now get this. You'll open that door when I give the word, and you'll keep your trap shut. That goes for all of you. Don't make a peep when that door is open, you understand? And don't show your faces outside this office until I had a chance to get out of the lobby into the street. If you do, well, it'll just be too tough. Okay, Toots, open the door. Come on, open it.
All right. There.
That's it. Well, good night, everybody. And, thanks a lot.
Well, he's gone.
Gee whiz, what are we going to do, Mr. Winters?
I'll call the police, of course. That's the only thing to do. Yes, that's what I'll do. I'll call the police and have them send over.
Well, Mr. Winters did call the police. And a few minutes after he'd hung up, a couple of detectives came around to the theater to investigate the holdup. We described the man who'd committed the robbery, and after we'd finished...
Now, Mr. Winters, is there anything you'd care to add to that description?
Why, no, there isn't.
How about you, Miss Larkin?
I'm afraid I can't add a single thing to the information you already have.
I see. And you, son? Is there anything about this man that seemed at all unusual?
No, there wasn't.
Then, according to this description of him, he must have been a very ordinary type of man. In other words, this description might fit any one of 1,000 men right here in Belrose.
Well, I suppose that's true.
Yeah, I suppose it is. But tell me, Winters, how did he manage to get into your office?
Oh, he arranged that very nicely. He pretended he had a complaint to make and had one of the ushers, a boy by the name of Walter Crane, bring him to my office. The boy left, and this crook pulled a gun on me, told me what he was going to do, and then calmly waited for Miss Larkin to bring him.
And he knew that Miss Larkin was going to bring the money here to your office.
Why, he seemed to.
That's very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Begins to look as though the whole thing were engineered by someone rather well acquainted with your regular routine.
Why, you don't mean that...
I'm afraid I don't mean anything just yet, Mr. Winters. Simply a theory. Could have been an inside job.
I hardly think that anyone...
Well, now, please, Mr. Winters, let me do the thinking.
Why, yes, of course.
Roper.
Yes, sir?
Go on outside and get all the employees of the theater together. Tell them I want to talk to them.
Yes, sir. I'll tend to it right away.
And while you're waiting for me, you might frisk them. It's just possible that you might find something that'll give us a lead. After you've done that, you can come back here and, well, go ahead. Go ahead, get going.
Yes, sir.
Now, Mr. Winters, I'd like a list of all the people employed here in the theater. I want to know how long each one of them has been with you, and I want to know...
Well, Mr. Winters prepared a list for Detective Forster. And while they were going over it together, I happened to see something that struck me as being mighty suspicious. I didn't want to mention it while anyone else was around, so I decided to scribble a little note on a small piece of paper and slip it to the detective while nobody was looking. Well, it worked all right. And a few minutes after we'd read the note, Detective Forster sent Mr. Winters and Miss Larkin out of the office. He made some excuse about wanting to question me. Told them to wait outside. After the left, he turned to me.
Well, young fellow, according to that note of yours, you wanted to tell me something. Now, what's it all about?
Well, you see, sir, I really don't know myself. It's just that it seemed kind of suspicious, the way she did it, I mean.
She?
Miss Larkin.
What'd she do?
Well, she pretended to read that magazine over there on the table, but she wasn't really reading, I could tell that.
Oh, what was she doing?
Well, she was tearing a small piece of paper into some little bits and dropping them in that yellow vase over there.
I see. Where did this little piece of paper come from originally?
From her pocketbook.
Are you sure?
Positive. It was the click of the pocketbook catch that attracted my attention to her.
I see. And you think that that this little piece of paper might have something to do with this case, is that it?
Yes, sir. I kind of have an idea she was afraid you were going to have her searched like the others, and... Well, there you are. Now, if you could manage to fit those torn bits of paper together like a... Well, a jigsaw puzzle, it might mean something.
Yeah, Yes, you're right about that, Eddie. It might mean something. At any rate, we'll see. Is this the vase you meant?
Yes, sir.
I see. Well, thank heavens there isn't any water in it. We'll just, sure enough. Here are the torn bits. Well, wait a second. This isn't paper. At any rate, it isn't ordinary paper.
What is it, then?
As I'm very much mistaken, Miss Larkin tore up a snapshot. Picture of something or someone she didn't want to see. Wouldn't be at all surprised if she... No, but come on over here, Eddie. Over here. You and I are going to solve a jigsaw puzzle. Maybe a robbery. I have an idea this picture is going to be... Well, it's going to supply a whole lot of answers to a whole lot of questions.
And after Detective Forster and I had fitted all the pieces together, he sent for Mr. Winters and Miss Larkin. As soon as they came back into the office...
Now, if you'll just try to be a little patient with me, there are a few more questions I'd like to ask you. Mr. Winters.
Yes?
Do you suppose you'd recognize this thief if you were ever to see him again?
Of course.
And you, Miss Larkin, would you recognize him?
Why, I think so.
Oh, you think so? You think so? Well, that's something. Don't suppose you ever saw him before. Or did you, Miss Larkin?
Of course not. Don't you suppose I would have mentioned it if I had?
I wonder.
What do you mean by that?
What do you think I mean?
I don't know.
Oh, yes, you do.
I tell you, I...
You just said that you never saw this man before, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, and that's the truth.
Oh, no, it isn't. It's a lie, and you know it. You did see this crook before, and you're going to see him again. Perhaps tonight, perhaps tomorrow, perhaps next week. Oh, yes, Miss Larkin. You're going to see him again because you've got to get your cut of money he stole tonight.
Are you accusing me?
Yes, I'm accusing you of engineering this whole job.
Oh, good heavens, man, you can't be serious about this.
Oh,
you
I'm serious about it, all right. I was never more serious about anything in my life. Look here, Winters. You said you'd be able to recognize the thief if you ever saw him again, didn't you?
Why, yes, yes, I did.
All right. Well, step over here to this table and take a look at this picture.
All right.
Eddie and I had quite a time putting it together, but it was worth the trouble. Well, how about it, Winters? Do you, well, what do you think?
Let me see. Good heavens, that's the man. The man in the theater. Well, how did you get this picture? Where did
Miss
you...
Miss Larkin was kind enough to tear it up and leave the pieces in that little yellow vase. And Eddie was alert enough to see her. How about it, Miss Larkin? What's the answer?
I... all right, I'll talk. His name is Freddie Benson, and you'll find him at the Palace Hotel. Mm-hmm. He's an old boyfriend of mine. We worked the whole thing out together and figured it'd be a swell chance to pick up some easy money. Well, it didn't work, did it? I don't know as I'm particularly surprised either, after all.
And later the same night, Detectives Braun, Forst, and Forster went to Freddie's room in the Palace Hotel and calmly arrested him for the robbery. Both he and Miss Larkin pleaded guilty and were sent to state's prison. I guess they realize now that easy money always comes the hardest. Well, good night, fellas. I'll be seeing you.
All Junior G-men, stand by. Stand by for thrilling details concerning the next broadcast. Calling all Junior G-men. Calling all Junior G-men to proceed at once to points of duty. Calling Junior G-man Bert Taylor to report to Director Donald Peterson at the next meeting on this station to give detailed report concerning...
The giant footprints.
Well, there's an exciting quarter hour for the kids after school. Junior G-Men. And while we're in the mood and still waiting for dinner, at least the kids were it while they were listening to this, we're going to hear another one almost like it. This is called The Firefighters. Tim and the women are rescued. And the date is December of 1949.
Stand by all stations.
Attention, all districts. A five-alarm fire. Five bells. Move in immediately.
That's it. Let's roll. Let's go. Firefighters. Presenting Firefighters, the true-to-life story of our unsung heroes who stand ready to ride by day or night against our most murderous enemy, the demon of fire. In just a minute, we'll join Chief Cody and Tim Collins, rookie firemen, in the cold glare of the floodlight at the rear of the burning tenement building, where an unconscious woman lies across the sill of a top-floor window. If she is to be saved, Tim Collins must move fast. And while he makes ready, here is a message you ought to hear. Let's go, firefighters. Let's go to the scene of the tenement fire where, you remember, Tim Collins and Chief Cody suspect that Dapper Joe Ferguson knows more than any honest man should know about the origin of the blaze. Just a moment ago, the firefighters learned that Mrs. Ferguson is trapped in the top floor of the tenement at the rear of the burning building, and Ferguson cries out,
Chief Cody, my wife, she's up there still. I thought she got out. I thought she got out safe like the rest.
Everybody else got out safe, Ferguson. Be strange if the only one we lost should be...
No, Chief, you gotta save me, you gotta... Look, I got money. I'll give you all I got.
We don't need your money for doing our duty, Ferguson.
No, take it, Chief, take it. Look, it's the insurance policy.
Huh? Let me see that.
Sure, the insurance on my furniture. $500, Chief. As soon as I collect the money for what got burned up, you can have it.
Ready for the scaling ladder, Chief.
That's enough from you, Ferguson. I'll see you later.
No, listen, you gotta listen to me. I don't care what happens to anybody else. I don't care what
happens... That's enough, you. Now get back there and keep still.
Yes, sir. Yes, Chief. Yes, sir, I will.
Collins.
Ready, sir.
Send that woman down to us on a lifeline. There's not much time. Now, when it comes your turn to come down...
Stand by with the net, sir. That's all I ask.
All right, Tim. You have your scaling ladder. You know what to do.
Yes, sir.
Good luck, and up you go. You men with that hose. There's a man going up. Wash down those buildings next door. But watch it. Man on a ladder.
And a good man, too, Chief. One of the best.
What's that?
I said one of the best, Chief. Look at him climb. Now, me, I don't like a scaling ladder.
You climbed on one often enough, Murphy.
Keep a going, Hooksy. Only two more floors. Oh, sure, Chief. Often enough. But what I like is a real ladder, not one of those poles with the rungs sticking out on each side like a fish pole with handles on it all the way along.
Watch him go. Straddle the windowsill. That's right. Pull up the pole.
Reach it up overhead. Clinch the hook over the windowsill above him and... Up he goes like a monkey.
Murphy, we're out of our minds standing here like this.
Yes, sir. I'll go get the net for Hooksy. Hey, that Ferguson.
Huh? Where is he?
Slipped away whilst we were watching Hooksy Collins.
I'll get him when I want him. Call that rescue squad, Murphy. Bring the net.
Yes, sir.
Oh, man, it's hot here. This place... won't stand much longer. Floors are due to collapse. Now, straddle the sill. There. Pull up the ladder. Heavy. My arms are heavy. Run her up so the hook goes in the window above. Now, this is the risky one. She's lying half over the sill. Can I get the hook on the sill without hurting her? Careful now. Ease it down slow and up. No, she's moving. Mrs. Ferguson, can you hear me? Mrs. Ferguson, move to one side. Get off that sill. There goes the hook. And here goes Collins. There. Mrs. Ferguson, where are you? Oh, good grief. She wandered back into that smoke. I'll have to go in after her. Oh. It's all right, Mrs. Ferguson. This is the fire department. Now, look. I'm going to send you down to the men on the ground. I've got to put this rope around you. There. Now we snub the end around this iron bedstead here. There. Ready below.
Let her come.
Now, Mrs. Ferguson, can you hear me?
Joe isn't bad. Don't you understand? It's just the gambling. It's the gambling makes him do terrible things.
Huh? Oh, look. Look, Mrs. Ferguson, try to understand what I'm saying. Can you hold the lifeline here with your hands? Oh, good grief, she's dropped off again. Well, never mind. Look, if you can hear me, Mrs. Ferguson, don't be afraid. I'm going to let you down like a dozen eggs in a basket. You won't feel a jar.
Hurry it up there!
Here she comes!
Chief, the net. We can't spread the net in that angle.
One thing at a time. Get that woman down safe.
First aid! Bring the stretcher!
Don't be frightened, Mrs. Ferguson. You're almost down to the ground. Ready with the blanket, first aid. She got singed coming past those windows. Fire's working through to the rear.
Okay, Collins, lower away. Slack that rope, we got her now.
That's it. What's that she's saying?
Joe, you're not really bad. You just do such terrible things.
Something about Joe, Chief Cody.
Poor woman. That husband of hers will break her heart when she comes to. Turn her over to the first aid boys, Murphy. Yep.
All right, here's your package, first aid. Take her away.
Collins, can you hear me?
Ready with the net.
Collins, we can't open the net in this angle. No room. No room.
Hey, Chief Cody, the stairs have collapsed. The floors are getting ready to go.
Collins can't get through to the front of the building where the ladders could reach him. We can't spread the net for him under that window because the other building backs up too close.
The lifeline, Chief. If he comes down in the lifeline.
Look at the flame through those windows below him. The woman just barely got past. He'd be burned to a crisp if he tried it now. Oh, if he could...
Hey, look, Chief. He's reached his ladder straight across to the next window.
No, no, past it. He's hooked the sill on the corner window. Now, what in blazes?
He's going to swing. He's going to try to swing on the ladder. Chief, if he...
Rescue squad.
It...
Get that net spread right here. The ladder swings him out far enough, we can push him.
Here I go!
He's swinging out, Chief. He's out of the angle. He... Watch your grip on that net. Here he comes. Go! Goodbye.
Murphy. Good. Murphy, get him out of this.
Come on, boy. Come on. You made it, Hooksy. You flew like a bird.
Searchlights. Kill that light. Pull out and fast. Hose company, this building is going to fall. Now give me water and close in when she falls.
Come on, Hooksy boy. Time to get out of here. Lean on me.
The woman.
Lean on
me. She's all right, Murphy. The flame from the windows. She's all right.
Oh, sure, kid. She's fine. She's sleeping like she was in her own bed over at first aid.
All companies pull back. You truckmen, save your ladders. Back. Back across the street. All commanders, pull back. Save your ladders.
Hurt! Get that crowd back. She's going to fall.
Over here, Chief Cody. Here at first aid.
Well, Collins?
Yes, sir.
I was looking for you. Any damage?
No, sir. She collapsed into the street. Hose 209 knocked down the embers. Looked as if they'd spread into those little shops over there, but they...
Yes, I know. I've got eyes. The whole street is blocked with wreckage. But the boys will take care of that. I mean, any damage to you?
No, Chief. Only this.
Great blistering blazes. What's that, mittens?
First aid wrapped up my hand, sir. A couple of scratches when I swung out on that ladder.
A couple of scratches. When I thought you were going to break your neck. Well, all's well that ends well, if it ends at all.
Yes, sir.
Now, where's that Ferguson? I want to put an end to him.
Murphy went scouting for him, Chief Cody. He'll bring him here, if he can find him.
Hey, Officer Martin. Tom, have you seen a short, wide little rascal with a... Well, what do you know?
Now, put him down, put him down.
And who are you? Them's my suitcases. I left them here, I ought to know.
Well, now, if that's the case, maybe you can identify them two bags. Maybe you can tell me what's in them.
Sure I can. This one, the heavy one, that's my tools for my trade. I'm a mechanic when I'm working. And this one here, this is my clothes, mine and my wife's.
Oh, now, if you're telling the truth, that's easy found out. Before I'm asking you to open them two bags, tell me another thing.
Listen, it's cold, it's late, it's almost morning. You're supposed to be here watching a fire line. Go watch it. And lay off people that lost everything they own in a fire.
Lost everything they own, is it? Except maybe a couple of suitcases that just happened to be sitting behind a signboard across the street. Well, now, Chief Cody might be interested in a sad case like yours, mister. Murphy, will you look what I got here?
I've seen him before, Tom. And I've got a hunch Chief Cody does want to see him again. Bring him along, Officer Martin. And let him carry those bags along, too.
There isn't much doubt that Joe Ferguson is implicated in the case of the tenement fire from which 12 families were rescued in the nick of time. But to prove Ferguson guilty of setting the fire is the problem that confronts Chief Cody and Tim Collins, rookie firemen. Keep step with this important investigation in our next True to Life episode of The Firefighters. In just a minute, Chief Bob Cody will tell you boys and girls how you can help the firefighters in your own hometown. But before you meet Chief Cody, here's something else you want to hear. And now, Chief Cody with a special assignment for all young firefighters. Chief Cody.
Hello, boys and girls. This is Chief Cody, and here is your special assignment. You are to examine your local newspaper for a report of fires for the last 24 hours. Read this report and note whether or not any false alarms have been pulled. Remember, a false alarm is a safety hazard, and to pull a false alarm is a disgraceful as well as a criminal act. So check up on the report of fire alarms in your community and do your part to keep that record clear of false alarms. That is all, firefighters. Goodbye for now.
Fire Chief Cody and the young rookie fireman Tim Collins will be back on the same station the next time you hear...
That's it. Let's roll! Let's go! Firefighters!
Firefighters is written by Frank Jones and is a copyrighted feature of William F. Holland Productions.
I think that clanging fire bell will stay with me for a long time. Well, it's time to listen to not the fire bell again, but music. And we'll start off with Benny Goodman, and we'll follow that with Frank Sinatra. So it's a nice combination. This is Benny Goodman from 1936 in the Congress Hotel, and the Frank Sinatra will be the light-up time from 1949. So here we go.
I feel like a feather in the breeze. As an antidote for the blues, I'm shooting high. National Broadcasting Company is presenting the music of Benny Goodman and his orchestra from the Joseph Urban Room of the Congress Hotel in downtown Chicago. And now a special, Big John Special, by Benny Goodman and his orchestra. Cuts his men loose on a tribute to that area below the Mason-Dixon line. Dear old Southland. forced reluctantly to leave Benny Goodman stomping at the Savoy. Benny Goodman's orchestra has been playing for you from the Joseph Urban Room of the Congress Hotel in downtown Chicago. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
WEAF, New York.
It's Light Up Time, starring Frank Sinatra and Dorothy Kirsten with Jeff Alexander in the orchestra. Now, here is Frank Sinatra.
Jeffrey, cut a hoot, cut a hay.
Be goody good, good to me. I'll be goody good, good to you. Give me all your kisses, and I'll give mine to you. Don't go out with anyone else. I'll tell the girls I'm through. Be goody good, good to me. I'll be goody good, good to you. Be goody good, good to me. I'll be goody good, good to you. Don't give me cause to worry. I'll never make you blue. When someone else says, cuddle up, dear, just say no, no can do. Be goody good, good to me. I'll be goody good, good to you.
Light Up Timers, tonight the truant office is just going to have to mark Dorothy Kirsten absent. It seems our lady fair is over at Paramount making a picture with an early American crooner. This evening in her... That's a funny joke, an early American crooner. Come, come, you have to laugh faster than nothing. This evening in her place we present a glamorous gal with a glorious voice. So let us light up a welcome for Miss Lucille Norman.
Thank you, everybody. Frankie, I must say you really have a nice little place here.
Oh, it's only 15 minutes, but we call it home.
Oh, no.
Lucille, I think it would be nice if you told the folks something about your background.
Well, all summer I've been singing on the railroad hour.
Last Sunday I heard about another gal who's been working on a railroad, Mary Livingston's sister, Babe. She's an engineer on the Erie line. But what else do you do, Lucille?
Well, let's see. Oh, yes. For many years I've been working for the Beacon Van and Storage Company.
Well, that's mighty good to know. The next time I have a piano to be moved, I'll call you.
No.
But right now, we have a song to be moved, and a moving song it is, too. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Lucille Norman singing The Last Mile Home.
The longest mile is the last mile home. When you've been away, the dear dreams are the dreams of home. When you've been away, you travel far over land and sea. Then one day it's as clear as can be. The sweetest smile you'll ever roll is the last mile home. Far away from my home. The sweetest smile you'll ever own is the last mile home.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I can't tell you how excited I get when I hear beautiful singing.
I heard that you were a true lover of music, Frankie.
Indeed I am. Well, last night I entered the opera.
Which one did you hear?
La Boheme by Puccini.
How did you like it?
You know anybody wants to buy a high silk hat? Frankly, I think Jolson Sings Again will be bigger at the box office. You know, in opera, they don't have any Larry Parks. And by the way, Lucille, how about you and I swapping a few popular arias that we happen to have all racked up in a medley?
I'd love to.
Well, we'd sure love to have you, dear.
I can see, no matter how near you'll be, you'll never belong to me. But I can dream, can't I? Can't I pretend that I'm locked in the bend of your embrace? For dreams are just like wine, and I am drunk with mine. I'm aware my heart is a sad affair. There's much disillusion there. But I can dream, can't I? Can't I adore you? Although we are oceans apart, I can make you open your heart, but I can dream, can't I?
A very tender rendition, Miss Norman. I bet hearing you sing that song has Grandpa holding hands with Grandma. And now I shall sing something for the kiddies. I make a date for golf, and you can bet your life it rains. I try to give a party, but the guy upstairs complains. I guess I'll go through life just catching colds and missing trains. Everything happens to me. I never miss a thing. I've had the measles and the mumps. And every time I play an ace, my partner always trumps. I guess I'm just a fool who never looks before he jumps. Everything happens to me. At first my heart thought you could break this jinx for me. That love would turn the trick to end despair. But now I just can't fool this head that thinks for me. I've mortgaged all my castles in the air. I've telegraphed and phoned, sent an airmail special too. Your answer was goodbye. There was even posted due. I fell in love just once, then it had to be with you. Everything happens to me. Everything happens to me. It's very clear our love is here to stay. Not for a year, but ever and a day. The radio and the telephone and the movies that we know may just be passing fancies, and in time may go. But oh my dear,
Our love is here to stay. Together we're going a long, long way. In time, the Dodgers may crumble, Gibraltar may tumble. They're only made of clay, but our love is here to stay.
This is Highlight Time on Light Up Time. We're spotlighting a song which we predict will furnish a sudden upsurge in the employment of mandolin players. Our new Columbia record of the song is now on the market, and we hope that you find it as easy to listen to as we find it is to sing. On the island of Stromboli, recklessly I gave my heart. On the island of Stromboli, every dream I own had its start. If you tell me it was madness, I can only shrug and sigh. If you ask me for a reason, I can't tell you why. It wasn't the moonlight, for there wasn't a moon, no violins were playing. Yet our heartstrings were in tune. How can I forget Stromboli? How can I begin to try? Tell me I'll regret Stromboli. I'll say, what care?
Well, everybody, Light Up Time is coming to its close until tomorrow evening when Frank Sinatra, Dorothy Kirsten, Jeff Alexander and the orchestra, and yours truly, Don Wilson, will be back again.
Ladies and gentlemen, time has expired on this little romp through history, but we'll be back next week with much, much more. Till then, this is Jim Dolan saying thank you for listening.